What's up, OUXers? I am very excited to share this really amazing conversation with Dan Mall and I. This is a continuation of our conversation from back in 2020 when he was literally the first guest on the OUX podcast. So it was really cool to have him back on, talk more about design systems, applying Orca to design systems. Really interesting stuff there. So very excited to share this conversation with you and hear what you think about it. As always, make sure to go over to the OUX forum to discuss the episode if you have any further questions or comments about it. That's forum.oux.com. Totally free to join. Just head over to the bulletin board. And if you're listening to this in somewhat real time, it should be near the top of the bulletin board. You should see a post on that and we can chat about it. But before we jump into the episode, I have a big announcement to make. We have our dates for cohort 10, and it's not what you might think. We are starting cohort 10 on September 2nd, 2024. We are having a one cohort year. So why are we doing this? So this was announced in the newsletter. So if you've already read the newsletter, then you can just skip over this. But oh, and if you're not on the newsletter, oux.com/newsletter, make sure you're on there. Get the free 55-page OUX launch guide. Really, really valuable resource there. Totally free. So go ahead and make sure you're on the newsletter. Okay. But if you didn't catch that in the newsletter, yes, we are pushing cohort 10 out until the fall. We looked into how to make two cohorts work, considering I took January off, and then I ran this advanced training in February, and now it's the middle of March. And so Luke and I sat down and we really tried to see how to really make that work with the two cohorts without them overlapping, without them going into the holidays. And if y'all don't know this, cohorts are 10 weeks, but there's 2 weeks of grace period after the cohort where folks are testing and we're still helping people get their assignments done. And then there's actually 8 weeks before every cohort in prep and onboarding and getting our mentors set up. There's a lot that goes into a cohort. So it's 20 weeks to run a cohort, and we're in the middle of March now. So literally the math doesn't work. And there's so many other projects that we are working on. We're just working on bringing all sorts of cool stuff to you. So there's so many projects. I mean, the ebook, for one, that I've been talking about for, I don't know, like 16 years or something, maybe more like 2.5 years, but it's getting long in the tooth. We want, there's so many things that just like, I almost said it, like, I don't want to say it out loud, but definitely the ebook, a refilm of the four fails, the four UX fails course. We're getting that out too. So we have just all these irons in the fire right now. And doing a spring cohort was just going to be kind of crazy making. And also, like, it would be, all these things are trade-offs, right? So we'd be pushing other things off. And we're just going to have a really epic cohort 10 in September, back to school season. So, and that's also a time where we found people really love to do the cohort. It's beginning of September. Kids are going back to school. You can go back to school. It's near the end of the year. You can really make this year count. So it seems like a really good time for people, and we'll be wrapping up right before Thanksgiving. So that's going to work out really, really well. So if you have been waiting to enroll in the self-paced masterclass because you're like, well, or you haven't been enrolling in the self-paced masterclass because you're like, I just need to do the full white glove treatment of a certification cohort and you know you want to get certified, I am here to encourage you, do not wait. Go ahead and start sinking your teeth into the content. You don't pay any more. You're basically just paying in two installments. So you pay to go ahead and join the self-paced masterclass. And there is actually so much help there in the self-paced masterclass. So you get within the forum, you get two extra Q&A sessions every month with me so you can ask questions. There's the arena where you can post your assignments and get peer-to-peer feedback. There is actually so much support that you can get when you enroll in the self-paced masterclass. Just being part of those extra spaces within the forum, that really is going to unlock a lot for you. And from what I've heard so many people say is if they haven't done the self-paced masterclass before and they join a certification, they wish they had, right? They've realized how intense the program actually is. And these videos, y'all, people go through these videos 2, 3, some of these videos 4 times over. So watching it once, following along, doing the exercises, or even not doing the exercises, just watching the videos and then going over it again when you get certified is going to make your certification experience so much better. It's going to actually help you get more out of the certification experience because you're going to feel like you have a leg up. You're going to be a little bit of a step ahead, especially in some of these more complicated and crunchy aspects of the process. There's really sticky pieces in here that are really difficult concepts to grok. So being able to kind of have a little bit of a head start, or in this case, if you're listening to this in somewhat real time in March, quite a bit of a head start and getting through that, being able to ask questions in the forum and playing around with some of those exercises before you jump into the certification, there is really absolutely no downside in doing this. So highly encourage that. You can go to oaux.com/masterclass. And of course, you can go in the forum, DM me in the forum if you have any questions about the masterclass or the certification or getting more training. I am happy to answer any questions and make sure that it is a good fit for you. Okay. So September 2nd, 2024, that is when we are going to be kicking off. And of course, I'll be talking about it more once we get closer. I just wanted to go ahead and announce it because it is a recent change. It was a little bit scary for me to do this, but it's definitely the right decision for us. And it's going to be the right decision for you to go ahead and jump in to that self-paced program so you can go ahead and start learning. Y'all, you can go and you can listen to the podcasts are chock full of value. I know that there's a lot here in the podcast and all the free content that myself and the rest of the community is creating, but it's not the level of learning that you are going to get in the professional grade program of the actual masterclass. You're not going to be getting into it in our entry-level program on Udemy. This is the only place that you are going to get that depth of learning that's really going to help you level up as somebody that is designing digital environments. Okay, so again, highly encourage oaux.com/masterclass. DM me in the forum if you have questions. And without further ado, let's go talk to Dan Moll. Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OAUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. Dan Moll, welcome back to the OAUX podcast.
Thank you. It's so good to be here after a long time.
A long time. We just realized that you were the very first interview on the OAUX podcast. That must have been like late 2020 or something. So middle of pandemic, we were talking about OAUX and design systems, and a lot has happened since then in your life and in my life. And here we are again.
I don't think I realized that I was the first guest. I don't think I knew that until today.
I might have been like kind of wily about it when you were my first guest because
I'm not mad at that.
I had another podcast before where I interviewed a lot of people, so it was like I don't know. But you were the legitimate first guest. I had 2 solo episodes and then you came on and
that's just so cool. I love it.
Hot out of the gate back in 2020. So it is so good to have you back. I'm just going to read your bio because you have an awesome bio and then I'm going to pop into some questions and we'll just chit-chat about design systems, OAUX, maybe Peru. I kind of just want to talk to you about Peru. So
yeah, we could do that. Peru is an adventure. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy 40th, by the way.
Thank you. Yep. I spent my 40th in Peru because I want to see a world wonder. So I can tell you all the things.
Let's see if we have time for that because that is definitely on my bucket list. And it sounds like just from kind of scrolling through that blog post of yours that it was a trek to get there. It's quite the adventure. Yeah, but I just turned 42. 40 is, or I should say, I just turned 40 as well.
And congratulations really to you as well.
Thank you. It does feel like, it feels like a big deal. And it feels like this kind of like a turning of the corner where you kind of like peek around and you can like see your own mortality. And I don't know about you. It's just like there's, I feel like I had a lot of fuck it moments turning 40 where just like a lot of other things just like I was like, I can't care about this anymore.
Yeah, totally. I'm lucky in that my wife for years and years, she's always said to me like 40, like when we get to 40, it feels like we will have arrived. So like yeah. For her, it was like 40 is the time where like you come into your own. And so I've always had that outlook for like the last two decades, I think now. And so I've been looking forward to it more than I've been dreading it. And so it's here and who knows what that's going to look like. But I'm like, I think I'm going into it glass half full more than glass half empty.
Yeah, it's like this, like I always thought over the hill meant like it's downhill from here. Like just like everything's going to shit. And it means it's downhill, like you're coasting.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
that's
you
right.
built a thing and now you can just kind of like... I mean, I don't think either of us are coasting, but it does feel like, you know, you're at a point where like you've created some stuff and you can maybe like take a little bit of a breather and sort of enjoy the fruits of your labor a little bit at 40.
I don't know about you, but I've always felt like an adult in a kid's body. Like I meant to be an old man. So I'm like, oh, I can like embrace being like a middle-aged man now. It's because I have the age that actually catches up to that. So cool.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely feel like I'm just starting to feel maybe like an adult, but still that like with that kind of mentality of I just can't care about this anymore. It does almost even feel like a little bit like I have a new sense of childlike wonder because Ooh, there's so many like things it. That like I'm just, you know, nope.
right.
Noping that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to read your bio. So Dan Mall is a husband, dad, teacher, creative director, designer, founder, and entrepreneur from Philly. You love Philly, don't you?
I do. I really do. Yes.
I've been to the Christmas market at Philly. So, but I need to spend more time there. Old city, old historic city.
Everything about it is great.
Everything.
Nothing bad about Philly at all.
So Dan runs Design System University, which is very exciting, where he creates, collects, and curates curriculum, content, and community to help enterprise teams design at scale. And we will definitely be talking about designing at scale. He also co-founded Great Job, a platform that helps parents and caregivers design their own handbook for raising amazing kids. Putting a pin in that too. Definitely want to talk more about that. Previously, Dan ran Design System Consultancy Super Friendly for over a decade. Dan writes about design systems, process, and leadership on his site, danmall.com, and his weekly newsletter, and on Twitter and Instagram. Are you still on Twitter?
Yeah. I want to say it like that.
Twitter. I got hacked last year on Twitter.
Oh, no.
And yeah, all of a sudden it was just like offensive t-shirts on my account. And I half-heartedly tried to get the infiltration out. And Twitter like just didn't help me at all. So I just gave up. So it was one of those like I would have been thinking about breaking up with them. And then they kind of broke up with me. And I was like, oh, I was going to break up with you. But
right.
Yeah,
it's definitely a different place than it was before, and I can't tell if I'm just like hanging on from nostalgia or if it still actually is valuable. I don't know, but I'm like, well, it's like one of those things that I have the habit of, and so it's harder to stop doing it than it is to keep doing it, I guess. And so I'm still there, but who knows how long that'll be.
It's harder to stop doing it. The inertia.
Yeah, exactly. That's really what it is. It's like
this object in motion is still in motion. And that's what happened when I got hacked. And that was like the thing that was just this blessing in disguise. Because
yeah, I can see that.
I was like, I guess I'm on Twitter because that's what you do is you go on Twitter and you say things. So for those that are popping in because they're fans of Dan Mall and not they're like, what is OOUX? And also, Dan, for you, just because we haven't spoken in 3 years and you've been deep in your own world. So I just want to kind of like high level, let you know, Dan, so we can kind of like steer the conversation, the type of people that are listening to this podcast. So who is this OOUXer, right? Who are the people that are listening to the podcast, practicing OOUX, and are also interested in design systems? So an OOUXer is kind of like, if you're thinking about the prototypical OOUXer, they're this blend of UX and leadership and business analysis and information architecture and systems thinking, all with this really like content first, inside out approach. So OOUXers, we also just have a really good idea about how databases and data works. So we can communicate and collaborate and bring in developers early on in the process. And they love that. They love us for that. So what we actually do, kind of the value that we provide, is we clarify and we define the core concepts in a system that are important to not only the business, but the users too, of course. And those objects, we take those objects, we make sure that everybody has a really nice shared understanding of what those things are in a system, what those conceptual things are. And then we map the relationship between those objects. We map all the relationships, do some like entity relationship diagramming stuff. We make a matrix of objects, and that helps define those objects further because we know how they sit in a system with each other. And also it plans out the navigation so we can figure out like how somebody would move from one thing to another thing. We nerd out on cardinality. So we actually do a lot of definition on cardinality. So is this a has many relationship? If it's a has many, how many? So we kind of get into the requirements around the relationship and figure that out as well. And we also, that also helps like not only just design the database, but also any kind of API design helps out with that as well. And we also go and we actually help define and clarify what actions people are going to take on those objects. So kind of like a functionality audit too. So we look at all the calls to action that are attached to those objects. And then finally, we are really good at structuring objects with attributes. So figuring out what is the core content. So that is where we're like working really heavily with content strategy on, okay, like how do we break down the content and bring in content workflows and governance, and also figuring out what the metadata is for all our sorts and our filters, and identifying what areas need more detailed taxonomy work. So actually like plugging in with more detailed information architecture. So many OOUXers now are proving their value in wrangling all of this complexity, all this system design work, and creating these really like beautiful, elegant systems at enterprise organizations. So places where there's mergers and acquisitions are happening, and places with like just lots of complexity that is exploding exponentially. So Design That Scales, the title of your new book, it's kind of your area of expertise. So my first big question for you is, what do you feel like is going to be so important for these type of people, for OOUXers, to know about design systems and the people that work in design systems? Like, what do you want people listening to this podcast that are doing that work to know about your world?
So I thought you were going to go the opposite way on that question.
We can go the opposite way too.
Yeah, because, and thank you for that catch up on OOUX. Also, I'm no stranger to OOUX, partly because we've talked about it, you know, a long time ago, and a lot of the folks that take my classes and courses have also taken yours and have OOUX certifications. And I love the methodology that you have because it gives a name to something that people didn't have a name for before. Like, to call somebody a design systemer is like, well, that could mean any sort of, any, you know, host of things. And I think that what you have is, you have a really great methodology for saying like, this is what we do, this is how we do it, and this is the way that you can apply those things. Which, as you're talking about it, all of the things that you talked about are things that people who work in design systems have to do. They just, some of them have come at it from a different angle, or maybe from a different background. Maybe they've come from design, or they've come from engineering, or they've come from, you know, other places, and are going, I guess this is design, but it always feels awkward. I guess this is engineering. Mm-hmm. I guess this is, you know, is it IT that I'm doing? Is it information architecture that I'm doing? And I think OOUX gives a nice framing mechanism to that, to say like, this is the stuff that we do. To your question, I thought you were going to go the other way around it, which is like, what are the things that design system folks need to know about OOUX? in the same way that you're saying, like, what are the things that OUX folks need to know about
design
systems?
I might want to answer that question.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll take the version that you asked, and then maybe you could take the version that I just asked. Yeah. So what is it that OUXers need to know about design systems? Is that it is the same work by a different name, I think. Mm-hmm. Design systems, in my book, I talk about there's seven different kinds of design systems that I've been able to identify in my work. And I think a lot of people think about them at some of the smallest scales, which is like a design system is like a handful of things in a design tool that you can reuse, which is true, right? That could be it's a handful of typography styles, or it's a handful of design elements or components or things like that. And that is a form of a design system. And in that way, an OUXer might look at that and go like, I don't know what there is to map and clarify and define in that, because it seems fairly straightforward. And that might be true, that might not be true. But if you think about design systems at the largest scale, at enterprise scale, there's a ton that needs to be mapped and defined and clarified because it's so ambiguous, and because there's so many moving parts to that, that someone has to wrangle the forest. Like, someone has to be able to see the forest. And it's usually people that have, whether OUX as a title, or just as a skill set, the people who can see those things and go, oh, I understand how that thing relates to that other thing, they're the ones that do well in design systems. So we need people who have that skill set. I'm teaching a class right now. I'm running a cohort of my design system in 90 days cohort. And the first five activities that people worked on, we're on week two right now, the first five activities in week one are all about mapping relationships, because that's the foundation that you build on top of. Everybody thinks foundations are like design tokens or typography or color palettes or things. And it's like, that's not the foundation. The foundation is the relationships across an organization, the people, how they work, the methodologies that they use, all of that stuff.
Relationships between, like, in an organizational relationship.
Yes. So week one has nothing to do with like, all right, open Sketch or open Figma or open, you know, VS Code or whatever, and start making some components. It's like, no, we're gonna create an influence map. That's what we're gonna do in week one. We're gonna create all of those kinds of things.
So that the design system could actually get used. And
exactly. Because otherwise it becomes a really great tool that no one uses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very.
All right. What do you say? What's your version?
Well, it's okay. So that is so interesting. And I'm like, I need to add that to my course. Like, seriously, so that you can, because, like, one of the biggest, not to go on a total tangent, but, like, one of the biggest questions that I get, or, like, frustrations that I get, is people come and they learn OUX and they love it, and they're like, oh my gosh, this is the work that I want to do. And then they get into the organization and it's like gears grinding, like, how do I actually get this work in? Because we're working in these little 2-week myopic chunks of work. So how do I do kind of like big picture system design, even at a smaller scale? And I'm being asked to just go straight to screens. So it's a big point of frustration. So mapping, like OUXing, or mapping up the organization and figuring out that, what did you call it, of influence?
Influence map.
An influence map. Oh yeah. My gosh.
Who are the people that support this effort? Who are the people that oppose this effort? Who are the detractors? Who are the neutral parties? Who are the undecided parties? Like, that's such an important thing. That's like one of the places that I've seen design systems fail, is that no one understands that.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter how good the API design is if you don't understand that, like, that one VP is out to get you. You know,
oh,
or that one
gosh.
VP is an ally that you've never even activated because you've never talked to that person. So all of those things, I think, are the bedrock of good system design work.
Oh my gosh. So, okay. So shout out to my OUXers listening. Like, somebody go make an influence map. Well, take Dan's course, make your influence map on how to get OUX in, because I have been out of the, you know, I've been outside of organizations for a while, so I almost feel like it needs to be somebody inside an organization to start testing that out. But I absolutely love that idea. That is such a golden nugget. So when you said it is the same thing by a different name, is it? So because we in the OUX world, I specifically like target people that would much rather play with sticky notes than pixels. So component design, making beautiful UI design is like, these are not the people that they don't really like playing in Figma. They don't like playing in Sketch or Adobe XD. like I don't even know what the tools are now. I just know like Figma's cool. People like, I don't know how to use Figma. But is it that, like, so we are at that conceptual level. What I will often say is, like, the difference between OUX and design systems is we're doing that mapping for the stuff and the content, and design systems is mapping the packaging of those things. So how are, like, what are actually people going to be holding and touching? So that's what needs to be, like, on brand and ergonomic and accessible. Like, the stuff that we're doing, like, there are definitely accessibility concerns that we can get to within the content, of course, for sure, and how that is organized in the database. But the ergonomics is, like, we're not thinking about, like, the human factors of actually the handles. We're thinking, what are the handles on this thing? And more about the labeling. So, like, UX writing comes into it. Maybe that's maybe where it comes in. So I'm wondering, with design systems, I feel like you're like, uh-huh.
I'm ready.
That to me does feel like a peanut butter and jelly thing instead of like two different flavors of peanut butter.
All right. So let me propose okay. my spiel. Okay. And then we'll see if
yeah.
you buy it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that design system people are a third category that are different than designers and engineers. And I think that design system people are closer to OUXers than they are to designers and engineers. And the reason for that is because I think that so to your question, like, is it the same thing? If you ask most people in the world, if you read most of the Medium articles that are out there, most people would say no. Design system people are designers, they're engineers, they're craftspeople, they are in the pixels, they are using Figma, they are using Sketch, they are using XD, they are writing in VS Code, they're doing those things. If you ask me, though, I'm like, I don't know that I buy that. And the reason is because I think that design system people, I think design system is a different skill than design. There's an overlap between the two. There's an overlap between design system work and engineering work, design system work and design work, design system work and product work. But it's a different skill. It's a fourth skill, you know, in addition to the trifecta of design, engineering, and product. What I've said to teams that I've worked with is design system people should be collectors, not creators. And that collectors, like for design system people, what I urge them to do is use creation as a last resort. Like, only jump into Figma to make something if there's nothing else that you can collect. And that, and I think that's a little bit different than how a lot of people think about design systems. Is I think design systems should be the smallest common set of reusable elements that you can have. Now, you can't create something to be common. It only becomes common after usage. So you can't create something and go, I created a common button. No, you didn't, because no one uses it yet. It's only when people use that button over this other button that it becomes more common than the other one. And so for design system people to be collectors instead of creators, it means that they're not using the tools as much as a designer would, as much as an engineer would, as much as a product person would. They actually have a different set of tools. I don't know that they're full on post-it note sticky world, but I also don't think that they're full on Figma world either. And, you know, to your secret about, like, you don't really use Figma, neither do I. Like, I don't really use Figma that much either, which feels like blasphemy if you think about me as a design system person. If you think about me as a designer, it's like, well, how can you not use Figma? But as a collector, it makes sense. You know, as a collector, I don't need to use Figma. I could use Keynote. I could use Google Slides. I could use, you know, FigJam. I could use Freehand. I could use, you know, like, any of those tools. Those are a design system person's skill set and tool set, more than maybe Figma, more than maybe VS Code, maybe more than Storybook. And I think that's I think that becomes closer to an OUXer skill set than it is to a designer and engineer skill set.
Yes. And I often say that I think I have an article on this too. Did I write an article on this, or did I just read it in Google Docs and never publish it? On how OUX is kind of like our information architecture is often more like information archaeology. So it's yes. more that we're like uncovering the truth about a system. Like, are we actually, like, sometimes I'll be like, your business is way too complicated and we actually need to do some like business process analysis because like we need to change some things about your business. But like the example I give often is like when I was at CNN and I was working on election results, like I was not designing how our government works, right? I was like, what is true about candidates and races and states and ballot measures, how do they all interact with each other? What are the relationships between a candidate? Is there a relationship between a candidate and a ballot measure? Like, I actually don't know. Like, let me figure that out so that I can reflect it as accurately as possible. But like, I'm not designing that. Like, I could use OAUX to design it, but often we already have a system. We already have a domain. And so often that domain has been the same for a really long time. And this is like one of the beauties of OAUX is like, we're figuring out like what's been true for sometimes decades. So like, if it's like the domain is edtech. So I've worked in edtech quite a bit. So it's like, it's classes, students, tests, like standards became a new thing. Like, I don't know, 15 years ago or something kind of new. So that was a new thing, but it's like parents, lessons, lesson plans, like we've had those maybe for a couple hundred years. And so that stuff changes. It's like that lower pace layer, right? So we're just going there to try to like figure out what's true as best as possible and then reflect that. So it is much more of this like collecting and curating and uncovering and like detective work that we need to do. And like, and that helps us. And like, I kind of want to get into process soon about like the whole idea of like process is stifling my creativity and just like creativity in general, we could probably nerd out on. But I'm wondering, so the ORCA process, the process that we use in OUX, objects, relationships, calls to action, and attributes, I'm curious if like that could, and we apply that to the conceptual stuff, right? Not the components, right? But is the process similar in design systems where it's like, okay, here are the components, here's all the packaging objects, the component objects, here's the relationships, here's how they can sit together. Here, like this thing can go next to this thing, but this thing can't go next to this thing, or this thing can have this many of these things, but can't have more than these things. And then here's what people want to do. Dan's nodding. Here's what the people want to do to those things. Like, this is clickable. This is not clickable. This is a multi-select versus this is a single select. Like, this is how somebody can actually interact with this thing. They can scroll through it. They can swipe through it. And then what are the attributes of that thing? That could even be more the back end stuff. Like, the attributes would be, you know, the visual side of it, but then also the code or even like variants maybe even as well. What's up, OUXers? There is something very important that I have neglected to do in the first 50 episodes of this podcast. And that is to implore you, dear listener, for review. So here I am, asking ever so nicely for you to drop a rating and review of the OUX podcast into either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This can really help us spread the OUX love. So if you've gotten any value from OUX and the ORCA process, which I'm assuming you have since you're here, I'd be so appreciative for a few minutes of your time. Okay, so how to do this? Don't actually go click on the rating metadata because that would be way too intuitive. On Apple Podcasts, go to the podcast detail page, scroll to the bottom, and you'll see some big stars down there that you can add stars. And then underneath that, there is another little link that says create a review. So that would be amazing. And on Spotify, you've got to do this on the mobile. On Spotify mobile, go to the 3-dot menu on that detail page and hit rate. And actually on Spotify, even on an episode detail, you can leave a comment there too. If you scroll down on the episode detail, there'll be something that says something like, how did you like this episode? And feel free to put your thoughts there. Thank you so much and happy OUXing.
Yes, 100% yes. I'm trying to frame this well. In my Design System in 90 Days course, it's 52 activities. Right. So it's like basically the way that it started was somebody asked me, like, how would you build a design system from scratch? And I was like, all right, let me write it down. And I wrote down 52 things. Of the 52, we don't get into components until 30, 31, like somewhere in there. It's not number two, it's not number four, because 1 through 30 are the objects and the relationships. Like, that's what we spend the time on. If you do that stuff well, and that's where the hard work is, if you do that stuff well, then the component stuff becomes much easier, right? Then you can, then it, After that, it becomes the technical work of, okay, let's figure out the attributes, which in design system world or design system language, that translates to like API design or translates to like what props people have, you know, and things like that. But you can't do that work without the objects and the relationships, without at least understanding those or even seeing those. And so many teams, that's why I see them fail at design systems, is they don't even address those. They don't even acknowledge that they're there. They just go start working on components. They go, let's make some buttons and some cards and some tables and some footers and some headers because, you know, everybody needs that, right? And it's like, well, who's going to use that header and how are they going to use it and when are they going to use it and when shouldn't they use this one and shouldn't use this other one? And they go, well, like if it's smart enough, then everybody will know how to use it, right? Then it'll be intuitive enough. And like, no, I've never seen that happen before. Or the other version is like, well, if we just give everyone the small pieces, then they can figure out how to put them together themselves. I'm like, that doesn't work either. Like, it's a good vision. It's a good, you know, it's a good dream, but that actually doesn't work in practicality. So if you're not mapping the object and the relationship, that's why we spend a lot of time on, or at least I spend a lot of time on that stuff, is if you can understand that well, then the number of, so what's the C in the Orca process? I forget the C is.
Calls to action or capabilities.
Got it. So like the calls to action capabilities and then the attributes, they become a lot smaller and easier to wrangle then if you can understand the objects and the relationships. And
yes.
I think what a lot of people do is they skip that and then they go right to attributes. And it's like, okay, well then if you go right to attributes, then the attribute list is going to be gigantic.
Yes.
Because you didn't realize that, like, oh, actually, these 1,000 attributes, we could actually map to 2 objects or 10 objects, you know, and then the mapping doesn't work at all. So, you know, all to say, this is why I like talking to you about OUX, is that I talk about it the same exact way that you do, except I don't use that Orca framework. I probably should use that Orca framework, you know, because
you could have it. You could use
like,
it.
I love that because it. It gives a framing to like, this is why this work is important, is that if you just skip over to the last step, then the last step is going to be massive. And that's what people end up doing. They end up building massive design systems that no one actually, you know, people use 1% of it or 2% of it.
So a couple things. One thing that came to mind is an analogy of like a wireframe sketch that somebody would do with the lorem ipsum in it. It's kind of like making a bunch of components.
Yes.
But
yes.
No kind of meaning behind them. Or I think you said something in our first episode together, I still remember, about like, it's like a box of IKEA parts with no instructions.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, that's when I was like, yes, Dan Moll, yes. And then the other thing about jumping to calls to action or attributes, like not really spending that time on the nouns and how all the nouns relate to each other. And so I've always thought about like, yeah, that's what UX designers do, is they go straight. Generally, UX designers will go straight to the actions, the user flows, like it's all about the verbs. What do people need to do in this system without really getting clarity on what are they doing the things to? What is the direct object that is being acted upon? And then you get CTAs in all sorts of weird places and they're not actually connected to the thing. You get less direct manipulation. It's just like becomes a lot more abstract without that kind of those anchors. And I've never thought about with the A of what a lot of information architecture people do is they go straight to the attributes or even content strategists too,
yes,
without the anchoring of the conceptual objects they go to those attributes. And then you just, again, you don't have this like container. You just have a bunch of pieces of metadata that are not connected to things of meaning. And
yes,
that's a problem.
Well, like a perfect example of that for design system folks right now is Figma just released last year, almost a year ago, variables, new functionality in Figma. People are going crazy about it because it is very powerful. And so what I see a lot of teams doing is they go like, this is really cool. And they make one thing and then they make two things. And like, this is great. This is awesome. We use variables. And then what do they end up with within the first week? 1,000 variables. You go from 2 to 1,000. So I'm like, and all they just did was use their standard primary color palette. 6 colors then turned into 1,000 variables. And I'm like, how are you going to wrangle that now? Like that's not even a tenth of what the entire system needs to cover. So if the entire system needs to cover 10 times more than that, so you're going to end up with 10,000 variables?
Can you explain to me what a variable is in Figma? Like, can you give an example of what, like, those 1,000 variables on a thing?
Yeah, totally. So Every brand has a main brand color usually, right? Mm-hmm. So like if you're Hertz Rent-A-Car, you've got brand yellow, right? That's like your big brand yellow. Everybody knows the brand yellow. What generally happens in design work and engineering work is like everybody uses that brand yellow or tries to, but every once in a while it gets watered down, right? That somebody uses a slightly different shade of yellow. Somebody takes a screenshot and their color profile on their monitor is a little bit different. And so they, when they sample that color, it's a little bit different. And all of a sudden you end up with 10 different shades of that same one brand yellow or 30 different shades of that same one brand yellow. It's a little bit darker over here, a little bit dimmer over here. And so the idea of a variable is like, let's define it in one place. And anywhere we want to use it, we just point to that one place. So that if we ever need to change it, we ever hire Pentagram one day and they say, you know what, Hertz yellow should be Hertz purple. We go, okay. Well, we change it in that one place and everything else kind of cascades from there. This idea of CSS, you know, so like the idea of variable in programming, a variable in programming kind of maps to a variable in design work or in engineering work. So it's how do we basically use one key object and then map a bunch of things to those objects. And that way we could say, well, yeah, this is our brand yellow, but we're going to use brand yellow for headers. We're going to use brand yellow for footers. We're going to use it for a card background. We're going to use it for a call to action background. We're going to use it for text over here. But all of those are mapping to the same thing. So if you don't architect that well, you can end up with easily 1,000 variables, which is like very powerful. That's cool. But the problem is not, and this is what I see in design system work, is people are less concerned with how they are going to use it than they are with creating it. The creating it is the fun part. So check this out. I just made 1,000 variables. Or, like, cool. How does everybody supposed to use that those 1,000 variables? Like, you have no instructions. You have no, like, you didn't say, well, these sets of people get to use these 10, and this other set of people gets to use these 20, and this sub-brand gets to use this. Like, it's not architected well because no one understood the objects and no one understood the relationships. They just went for the attributes. They just went for, like, now I have 1,000 of these. Isn't that awesome? I just generated 1,000 in a week. It's like, okay, well, so what's going to happen when you need to change 1,000? That's a lot of work now.
Yeah. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
And I welcome to design and engineering. This is why we need good systems people. You know, this is why we need good OOUX people. And that's why I see them as very similar, kind of in the same boat.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that like the parallels, another parallel that I was thinking of this kind of like without this sort of foundational structure, like there's this, I'm going to butcher it, but I need to memorize my favorite quotes. Note to Sophia, memorize your favorite quotes so you don't butcher them. But John Gall, he was like a pediatrician or something. You know John Gall?
Yeah, Gall's Law, sure.
Gall's Law, what does he say? He's like, you got to create a simple system that works to then make a more complex system that works. Like, don't go straight to the complex system. And like the mapping those objects and those relationships gives you those nice boundaries. I mean, it's great for scope too, but like, this is what our thing is. And here's the CTA is attached to this thing and these attributes attached to this thing. And it just contains everything really nicely so that you can create a more complex system. And without that, like one thing that I've seen in my world is like the systems of just when you're thinking in pages, right? And maybe you have a couple templates of your pages, but the templates are like, they're not conceptual templates. They're more like, there's the grid template, and then there's the list template, and then there's the detail template, and that's just the templates that you have, and anything goes in there. Then what you get is you get sites with thousands, tens of thousands of unique snowflake pages and no real consistency. And what then, I guess this is kind of like segueing into what I want design system people to know, to loop back to that, is that like that's a lot of cognitive load. That is a lot of cognitive load if you don't have, like, you want consistency. I guess in a nutshell, what I would say to the design system people listening is you want consistency to work for you, not against you. And consistency can do either. So consistency working for you is you've identified the objects, you've identified those concepts. You've got, let's say, I think I read your about page last night, and you like, did you just watch Disney movies when you were growing up, or are you still like a Disney family?
I did watch Disney movies growing up. I still watch Disney movies now.
Disney movies. Okay, so let's just think Disney. So like let's say we've got movies, we've got characters, we've got actors. So a character could be the Little Mermaid, but we have multiple actors who have played the Little Mermaid, right? So then we've got the movies, and we've got like three versions of the Little Mermaid. So we've got, or storylines even, and we've got parks, right? So we've got all these like conceptual things And we want consistency among those things. So we want to make sure wherever a park is showing up, it looks like a park, but it doesn't look like a character, right? And it doesn't look like, and even like a character and an actor look different, right? So from a design system perspective, we have, this is how we package up characters. This is how we package up actors. And even there's a really close relationship to those. We want to make sure that they look different. All right. And they're both like people. So maybe they're both in circles, right? So they can even look like the same type of thing. Like they're both people, they're both in circles, but it makes it really clear that this is an actor and this is a character. Okay. So that's actually differentiating, but you're consistent within. So whenever I see actors, they look the same. They're in a circle. The font is the same. The color is the same. The difference between the name and then even the radius around the cards. Just so I can start to recognize this is a person versus this is a, or this is an actor versus this is a character. And then inconsistency can work against you if you're just like, we just have cards. We just have cards, and you can put a movie in the card, and you could put a person in the card, and you could put an actor in the card, because our design system is so flexible, like anything can go in it. That is consistency working against you because people then can't tell the difference between the things.
Yes. I'm curious about your perspective on this. Do you think the Orca framework has to, like, do you have to start with objects and then end up at attributes? Is it possible to do it the other way around? Like, can you start with a bunch of attributes and then infer objects from that? Like, could you go the other way, or could you mix and match the order?
Yes. This is a very flexible process. I usually do start with the objects. I start with noun foraging, but as you're going through and it's like language foraging, right? So you're going through all of these inputs. You're going through your stakeholder vision documents and your user transcripts and the existing thing and the existing system. And you're looking for the nouns, but you also will find attributes that you don't know which object it goes with. You're like, popularity, great. Or like often in dashboards, you'll see that. Like sometimes it's really hard to see what the thing is. So you're looking at a graph and it's like price over time. Price of what? I saw this recently in some real estate software, and it was just like a price over time. And I'm like, is this the price of a single listing? It turned out it was the price of a zip code area. The average price of homes as like a zip code or neighborhood. So it's like neighborhood an object? Or is like zip code an object actually? Zip code seems like it would be an attribute. Maybe zip code is an attribute on a listing. And then there's a listing in the home, and how are those different? So yeah, you might find like an orphaned attribute that you need to say, like, who do you go with? And that becomes a really good question to ask, where you're looking at this and you can't figure it out on your own. You can ask your subject matter experts where this goes. That said, it usually does start with the objects, and sometimes you can go objects straight to the calls to action. The reason I love starting with the objects and then going to the relationships is the relationships help define the object further. So another butchered quote from Richard Saul Warman, you only understand a thing relative to other things in the system.
Yes. Yes.
So by going through the relationships, you can kind of see like before, and you also see how you need to split things out too. Because for example, Airbnb, I recently was talking to somebody on LinkedIn about this. Airbnb, and shout out to Elena Haskins. She's doing a great series on Orca. And we were talking about the difference between an Airbnb place and a stay. And in the beginning, you might just have place. And then you realize you have an attribute, like the check-in time. But check-in time doesn't really go on the place.
Right.
It's related to the stay. And there's a relationship. A place has many stays. A stay has one place that it's at. So mapping those relationships also helps you down the road when you think of attributes and you realize, like, and I'll see those confounded a lot of the time, where like you'll see all the attributes for a place and then I'll see something like check-in time, total price. I'm like, total price doesn't belong on the place because it depends on who's booked it and when they're booking it and how many days they're booking it for. So the attribute for place would be like cost per night. And then the attribute for stay would be total cost. So the order usually works pretty well, but that's why we iterate on it. We go through these rounds. So we're bopping back and forth. And then you figure out the relationships. And then when you get to the CTAs, you realize that there is a message CTA. And you hadn't thought about the message object. So now you need to add an object because now you, like, to have a message CTA, you kind of need a message or a review CTA. I see that a lot where people will add this complexity in the CTA matrix and not account for the actual objects and content that needs to be structured around it.
All right. So I'll share a quote with you now that I like related to this, which is from Andy Grove, who is the former head of Intel. And I share this with design system people all the time, which is he said, "Let chaos reign, then reign in chaos." And I'm like, that's the process, right? So it's like sometimes it would be great if we could always start from the objects and then go to the relationships and then never have to go the other way. But sometimes, as you said, sometimes you learn stuff by going like, oh, this actually doing this relationship work makes me realize I got to go back to the object work a little bit and make some modifications. And I think that that's totally fine. And I'll try to extend your metaphor a bit, you know, the Disney metaphor. I'll take it in the Marvel route, which is like, this is what people hate about comic books. Are you a comic book reader by any chance?
My husband is. I like the Marvel movies.
Okay, yeah. I like the Marvel movies. I grew up reading the comic books, so I'm like, I'm all in that world. And this is what people hate about comic books. That like the bad part about it is the way that comic book artists do it and comic book writers do it is they do a thing called retcon, which is they basically write a new story that erases what happened before. And that's what design system people do all the time is they go like, all right, well, okay, now I know we work at this gigantic organization that has all these apps. What we're going to do is we're going to create a new system that basically wipes away a bunch of that history. And it's like, wait. We don't want to wipe away a bunch of that history. We are trying to rein in the chaos. We're not trying to eliminate. We're not trying to forget it ever happened, right? Because then aren't we doomed to make those mistakes later? So when design system people become creators, when they go, well, what we do is let's just go back and create new objects. It's like, well, like we have all these attributes already here. Like, can't we actually go and do the next loop of that? Rather than saying like, let's just create new objects because now we'll be able to rein in, you know, we'll be able to wrangle the amount of attributes, you know, that we have or the amount of call to actions that we have. Like that's the thing that I want to, that's why I see OOUX folks and design system folks as really similar is like, go to the next loop, you know, go to the next loop of it because we're going to get to a place where there is chaos and that's okay. That's what designing at scale actually means and actually often results in. And that's not a bad thing. I think a lot of people try to pre-optimize for that and they go like, well, if we do it well, if we do the objects well enough, then we will have a manageable set of attributes, which is like in theory, yes, but that's not always practical. That's not always pragmatic. You know, that's not always how it shakes out. It's okay to end up with a messy set at the end and then just go, we got to do another loop and go back and refine some of those things. And to me, that's not design work. I think the design work is part of the creation work and like doing the new stuff and allowing there to creating some of that chaos. Like I think that's what design is intentionally creating that chaos. And then it's someone else's job to go, okay, now we're going to rein in that chaos. So that's why I see like design system folks and designers are different people. Design system folks and engineers are different people. They work together. They should work together well. But I think it's when designers decide that they don't want to be designers anymore and be system people is they start to retcon, you know, their own history. They start to like go, well, I'm going to erase that. Like we did bad design. I'm like, you didn't do bad design. You did design. And now someone else's job is to help systematize that design and organize it and curate it and, you know, and decide some things we're not going to do anymore, but that's different than going, that thing never happened. And so I don't know, maybe I took that metaphor in a weird way, but like that's how I see system work as like playing into how you can do design work at scale too.
It makes me think of going back and forth between like chaos and wrangling the chaos and chaos and wrangling the chaos and sort of like, hopefully making an upward spiral there of like, nice. You know, getting more and more elegant system and even a more and more robust system that is more elegant, which like, when do we ever see that? But hopefully if for the people that are using OAUX and design systems together, then you actually will have that. But I also think about the play between the system and the content of like, you know, doing some work. We spend like a week being like, all right, let's do an Orca sprint. Let's figure out what the structure is. Now let's kick the tires and get real content in there and it breaks. And then inevitably, it'll probably be like eight. Like if you go through the process, it'll be like 80, 70% right. But then you'll be like, this description needs to be broken out into three fields. We totally forgot that attribute. Those things, that nested object there, those things talking to each other, that just like doesn't make sense with the real content at all. And so actually like, and then you have to go back to the structure. And so, and then also like starting with a bunch of messy content that has no system, and then bringing it into a structure, and then breaking it by pushing the content in,
yep.
and just recognizing that that's going to happen. Like, I think people can sometimes get frustrated with that because they think that it shouldn't be happening.
That's right. Yes.
It's like
yes.
the Buddhist another bastardized quote. The Buddhist teaching of the suffering comes from thinking that there's a cure.
Like, yes.
No.
Yes.
This is just the game that we play.
Totally. Yes. So you asked me earlier and one of the questions that I get a lot of times is like who should be a design system product owner? Like who should be in charge of it? What's the skill set that is needed to do well at that job? And to me, it's like one way that I would say it, which I haven't said before, but one way I would say it is like I would rather take someone who understands OOUX than someone that has a graphic design or a UI design background or an engineering background. Like I think a lot of people think a design system product owner or a design system lead should be somebody who is like really good at Figma or somebody who's really good at, you know, React or what, you know, whatever the engineering flavor of the week is. And what I've always said is I would rather take someone who can make friends. And that's another way of saying someone who understands relationships, because I think that's what it takes to thrive in an enterprise and doing design work at scale and doing design at scale is someone who understands relationships. And like that's what an OOUX person is somebody who knows how to understand them, but map them, define them, clarify them, articulate them. And to me, that's the skill set. That's why I think design system and OOUX people are the same. And I think that's the job more than it is like I know how to configure the props in Figma or the API design in React or Angular or whatever. Like I think that's like that is a practitioner role that is necessary. I don't think that is a design system lead or a design system product owner or a design system, whatever the head of that team is. I think it's somebody who understands organizational relationships. I think that's the person that thrives in that role.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's like there's so much of being like this communicator, this translator that, you know, that the design system is like, you know, it permeates all of these different teams. And OOUX is like, I mean, when we run an Orca sprint, I mean, we're bringing in stakeholders, business analysts, content people, developers, like we're bringing everybody in, users even, to like say like, can we get on the same sheet of music? And then can we actually use the same sheet of music?
Yeah, totally. The conductor is almost never the best musician. Like it's the person who understands all the instruments and how they relate. Like that's the job of the conductor. It's a different job than the musicians, you know, than the violinists or than the oboists and all that stuff. It's a different job. And that person doesn't profess to be as good at the oboe as the first chair oboist. You know, like I don't know if oboist is the right word.
It's facilitation. Like so much of it is facilitation and communication. So I was going to ask you, like, with your new book, Design That Scales, like, why should an OOUXer read your book? But I think we answered that question in the last 40 minutes. So
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
Anything else to add about like why people should go and especially people that are these system design folks that are thinking about conceptual models and content first design should go read a book about design systems?
I think because it'll feel familiar. I think it'll use different words to talk about concepts that you already know. Like if you're already familiar with OOUX, I think you're going to be like, that looks familiar, even though I'm using different words to describe those things. I might be using design words or engineering words or practitioner words in terms of craft, but it's the same concepts applied to a different thing. So at the very least, it's that kind of thought exercise. It's like, oh, I want to see how this applies to like botany, or I want to see how this applies to, you know, marine biology. I want to see how this applies to enterprise design. So if that's something that you're curious about, that then, you know, I think the book will be good for people who are like, I want to see OOUX applied to a thing that is maybe less familiar to me, but using familiar concepts. I think it's a good book for that.
And I think it's really, to piggyback on that, I think it's going to be really great for the folks that love OOUX, but like want to continue taking it further through the process.
Totally.
So take the sticky notes, but then like, what does that all mean for when we actually are creating the things that people are going to actually be touching and interacting with. So very cool. Do you have time for one more quick question?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my last open-ended question for you is, you talked about on the, I got to listen to our podcast. I re-listened to that, did not realize that it was the first interview when I re-listened to it because I just like searched it in Spotify. And I was like, there's my episode. So you were talking about, you gave this great metaphor of knowledge being a cup. And, you know, you fill your cup and then you need to empty your cup. And then your cup is being filled again. So I'm curious now, what is filling your cup of knowledge and what are you emptying to other people's cups?
Yeah, totally. So the latter answer is a little bit easier, which is like, I have, you know, maybe more design system knowledge than the average person does from working on it in a while. And so it like seeps out of me. You know, it's like my kids make fun of me. They're like they always imitate me. They're like, I'm Dan Moll. I do design systems. Like they do that around the house, right? So it's like, yes, I talk about it all the time. They hear me talk about it all the time. It's something that I am full of that information and knowledge, and I want to share it with as many people as I can, which is why I do that. So that's the stuff that's like, my cup is full of that. And in order to make room for other things, I want to, I need to help pour that into other people's cups too. So I want to do that as much as I can. That's part of why I created Design System University. That's why I write about the stuff that I write about in my newsletter, on Twitter, and all that stuff. So I'm trying to empty a lot of that stuff because I'm like, I'm full on that stuff. And I want to share that with as many people as I can. Then to make room for a bunch of other things. I'm learning a bunch of other things, like both macro and micro, that are just interesting to me because I've never learned anything about them before. Some of them are professional, some of them are not. I'll share a couple of examples of each. I am learning how to get better at landscape photography because it's fun to me. And I have no professional aspirations for that. It's just like
your Peru photographs are so beautiful.
Thank you. That's a good example of like I'm learning how to do that kind of stuff, you know, in a way that I can track my progress. Where 4 years ago, I looked at my photos and I look at them now and I'm like, I'm getting better at this. This is cool. I'm learning. I'm buying new gear. I'm doing all that stuff. No professional aspirations or anything like that of it. Same thing with like I play basketball every week. I'm working on basketball moves. I'm changing my jump shot a little bit. I'm working on my Euro step. Like all these things. It's like, how is that going to help me in life? I don't know. Like, but it's fun and it's
interesting. Joy is a good reason.
Yeah, totally. And then on the professional side, there's a bunch of things in like being an entrepreneur that I just never spent time to learn, like marketing automation, like, you know, like all of that kind of stuff that I'm like, that's a whole world I didn't even know existed a year ago. Mm-hmm. And so just reading blog posts and articles and taking courses about that kind of stuff, and really about like how I as a teacher can be reaching a larger audience and sharing the stuff that I know. There's a whole ton of things there that I'm learning in the last year that I'm like, I didn't even know this was the thing. I didn't know about the science of YouTube or the science of algorithms and Instagram and how and email newsletters and, you know, tagging mechanism, like all that kind of stuff that is very energizing to me as a person who likes learning new things and is energized by that. It's a whole world that I'm like, this is really cool.
That is very cool. And congratulations on this new step in entrepreneurism.
Yeah, so, totally.
Yeah, if we ever want to trade some notes, we can we can do that.
I have many notes.
So people can go to there's Design System University, danmoll.com.
Yep. That's those are the main places, you know. And then all the socials where you tend to be, I tend to be there as well. Some more frequently than others, the Twitters, the Instagram,
even
the YouTubes.
Twitter.
Yeah, the LinkedIns, you know, all of that stuff. So all of those, I'm there somewhat frequently and then somewhat more frequently on others.
Very cool. Well, I feel like next time you come on the podcast, we really need to get on this whole like designing your life, applying to design to life, nerding out on that. That's something that I'm interested in as well.
Yes.
So we'll save that for next time.
All right. Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it. And thank you for having me on the podcast again.
Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!